This is Cincinnati Edition on a Sunday morning. I'm Mark Purcell. Thane Maynard's guest this morning is Dr. Greg Dahlem from Northern Kentucky University's Department of Biological Sciences.
Thanks for taking a few minutes. You know, I've been fascinated to learn a little bit about you and read a little bit about you. Of course, a professor at NKU.
Yes, among other things. One of the hats that I wear.
Exactly. But I also know you're an expert on flesh-eating flies and blowflies. And I said, what would people find more interesting than that? So tell us a bit about your research.
Well, I'll tell you, I've always had a fascination for insects ever since I was a little kid. And that kind of grew over the years, and finally I made it my life is studying bugs. Out of them all, flies just fascinated me more than anything else. And as I got into it and talked to other people when I was trying to decide what I wanted to work on, I had a professor at Ohio State that worked on these, but nobody was around that could identify them. So he said, that would be a good one. So I more or less said, okay, I'll give it a look. And indeed, I picked out a group that I've sort of devoted my life to now with the flesh flies and the blowflies.
Now, before listeners think, you know, well, that sounds kind of strange, I think everybody's heard about, by today, forensic entomology. So tell a bit about that, because I think that's part of what you're an expert on. And, of course, people hear about it on crime shows, but what does it really mean when people are looking at these insects?
Well, I'll tell you, I get called on to answer questions about these flies, especially when it comes in terms of telling time of death. Sort of what's called post-mortem interval is one of the main places these flies come into play. They're very good at finding dead animals or people, and very rapidly after an organism is dead, they'll start laying eggs or larvae on these and begin feeding. Sounds rather gruesome, but actually one of the best ways of telling how long a body has been in a field or outside, especially in the summer, is by looking at the types of insects and the size of them. So by knowing what species it is and what life stage it is, we can use tables and the temperature to determine within hours or days of how long that body has actually been in that location.
That's remarkable. So we don't get grossed out. Let's say it's not a human. Let's say it's a possum. There's a possum laying in a field, and you find that it's, you know, it had eggs laid on it, or even by then larvae. Or, you know, how in the world do those flies find a dead animal so quickly?
That's one of the mysteries, but they apparently can do it very, very rapidly. They do it by smell.
Okay.
And there's changes in smell that occur very rapidly after death. They'll come and investigate, and within hours, they'll be often laying eggs and such. And in the summertime, one of the amazing things is, and people can see this if they're driving along the roads, and one day they see a dead raccoon or something on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
5 days later, it looks like just a pile of fur. It's not that it's been run over a bunch of times. It's that the bugs have come in and eaten the whole thing. And so these flies, within a period of a week, can take a fairly big-sized hunk of carrion and reduce it to skin and bones.
And, of course, this is an important part of the way that resources, energy, calories move through an ecosystem. I mean, you can't just let a dead possum lay there forever. It needs to be turned into something else.
That's exactly right. They're sort of nature's cleanup crew here. And whether it's something small like a sparrow or large like a deer, they can get rid of that and process the vast majority of the animal in just a period of a week or two.
Mm, that's amazing. Now, I know you also teach a class in Costa Rica, and my observation, just cursory observation, is that in the tropics, that process speeds up even faster. Where I've been on a trail, and I mean, gosh, an animal seems to disappear almost overnight from insects.
Oh, yeah, or if not insects, some other animal will find it or whatever and
sure.
eat it. So the flies have in the tropics seem to me to have to battle the other carnivore mammals and stuff that will come and eat them before they're halfway developed, so they got to do it extra quick when they're down in that kind of a situation.
So now this is fascinating. I know all of the listeners here in this region would be familiar with Northern Kentucky University and know, obviously, they have a biology department. And yet the fields you're involved in, you're working on sequencing DNA and you're working on forensic entomology. It feels like there's all sorts of things going on at NKU and in your department that people might not even expect down there.
Oh, and we've grown up so much over the years. We have research projects going on in all sorts of different kinds, from everything from ecology to cancer research to entomology projects to just about anything somebody would find fascinating. We try to accommodate and get students working and getting their hands dirty and trying out some of these different things.
Absolutely. Now, since we opened by saying that among the things you're an expert on are flesh flies and blowflies, maybe describe a bit of what those are and how they're different. I mean, flesh flies implies that they eat flesh from dead bodies, but you're the one that knows. Let me know.
Well, I'll tell you, most of the blowflies you see, and these are the metallic green and blue flies mm-hmm. that you often see flying around a garbage can or something, they're mainly on carrion. So garbage, rotting animal matter, that's what they like to feed on.
Are those also what people call bottle flies?
Exactly.
Okay.
So the green bottle flies or the blue bottle flies, you'll even see those come out on a warm spring day or something sitting on the walls.
Mm-hmm.
For the flesh flies, the behavior is much more varied. So a few of them are living carrion, and thus they get their name flesh flies. But the vast majority do so many different things. I did a study on ones that live nowhere else but in the pitchers of carnivorous pitcher plants.
Hmm.
There's other ones that only attack spider egg sacs. There's ones that live in all sorts of different associations with different kinds of wasps.
Mm-hmm.
They'll go in and use their provisions as the food for their larvae and stuff. So I have just been, while the flies look very plain, sort of gray and black, the flesh flies do, their biology and their behavior is just fascinating. That's what really gets me going.
Absolutely. And working on the DNA, I guess flies in general have been studied more closely probably by biologists and researchers maybe than any other group of animals.
Well, especially when you say all flies and bring in mosquitoes and things like that, which are also flies, boy, they're so important in their role and their contact with humans that, yes, they have been very intensively studied. Now, to say that, though, we still have to realize there's so many different kinds of insects and there's so few experts or people working on them. So few jobs available for people who choose this kind of work. So right now in all of North America, I'm the one person working on sarcophagids or the flesh flies.
There you go. Well, I guess that's job security then, because someone's got to be an expert.
Sort of.
Now, do you ever bring your students? I know you teach a number of programs, but including running biology for non-majors. Do you ever bring them over to the zoo's insectarium?
I'll tell you, a couple of places that I do take them is Crone Conservatory with their butterfly show and thing that they have over there. That's a wonderful connection. The zoo insectarium, we come over, and Randy Morgan, your curator, has been excellent every time with answering questions and showing off that wonderful display, one of the best I've seen anywhere in the world.
Well, you and he are fortunate to be entomologists who don't have to work for a pesticide company trying to kill insects. Instead, you're trying to either keep them alive or learn about their natural history.
Exactly. And that's what really fascinates me is just, I just like watching them and I like looking at them as sort of that childhood curiosity. I've been able to keep that my whole life and never ceases to amaze me that some new article or new piece of research comes out or I'll be out in the field and see something I've never seen before.
That's right. You've never grown out of your bug phase that all little
That's
kids
right.
have.
A lot of people think it's just for kids, but
That's
there
right.
are things for even grown-ups to do.
Absolutely. Well, Greg, thanks for taking a few minutes with us. I'll look forward to seeing you at the zoo.
I'll look forward to seeing you too, thanks.
My guest has been Dr. Greg Dahlem from Northern Kentucky University. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Thane Maynard.